Oh yay. The Honorable, the Supreme Court of Texas. All persons having business before the Honorable, the Supreme Court of Texas, are admonished to draw near and give their attention, for the court is now sitting. God save the state of Texas, this honorable court.
Thank you. Be seated, please. Good morning. The court has two matters on its oral submission docket today. In the order of their appearance, they are docket number 100603, Texas West Oaks Hospital and Texas Hospital Holdings versus Frederick Williams from Harris County and the 14th Court of Appeals District, and 100605, In Re the Commitment of Michael Bohannon from Montgomery County and the 9th Court of Appeals District. The court has allotted 20 minutes per side for each of these arguments, and we will take a brief recess between them. The arguments are being recorded, and there should be a link to the argument posted on the court's website by the end of the day today. The court is now ready to hear the first argument, 100603, Texas West Oaks versus Frederick Williams.
May it please the court, Mr. Clement will present argument for the petitioners. Petitioners have reserved 5 minutes for rebuttal.
Good morning, may it please the court. If the act or omission complained of is inseparable from the rendition of health care services, then the claim is a health care liability claim. In this matter, and this is the standard by which the court has addressed the threshold question as to what type or what the essence of a claim is. Since DiversiCare, when it was first enunciated that this was the standard, and we're moving into now nearly two decades utilizing the standard.
Let me ask you something. If you're correct, if your view is correct, then wouldn't that result in anybody who walks into a hospital and was hurt, that say a visitor, say a plumber, anyone who walks into the hospital and they were hurt, they would have to file a claim as a healthcare liability claim under your theory. Isn't that correct?
Not necessarily so.
Well, where's the line?
The line is that these are cases that are very fact-intensive and fact-specific, and where you draw the line is specifically related to the specific acts or omissions that are being complained of. If those acts or omissions being complained of are inseparable from the rendition of healthcare services, then yes, it would be a healthcare liability claim.
And so let's say a visitor who goes into the hospital and is visiting a patient and something happens. Are you saying that what would happen in that situation?
It would depend upon what happened and whether or not that specific, whatever is being complained of, that is the act or omission being complained of, if that is an inseparable part of the rendition of healthcare services.
Well, let's say if they're in an elevator and the elevator falls. I mean,
I don't think that would necessarily be a healthcare liability claim. There are cases out there, and I'm sure the court is aware, for example, there is a case involving a visitor out of the Dallas Court of Appeals that came in to visit her husband. Upon exiting the hospital, she was assaulted by a psychiatric patient and filed claims against that hospital for that very act. She complained of they failed to maintain proper security of that dangerous psychiatric patient. Dallas Court of Appeals determined that was a healthcare liability claim because when you're dealing with patient observation, monitoring, or physical restraint in the event it's necessary, that may be an inseparable part of the rendition of healthcare services. In this particular matter, what we're dealing with is we're dealing with a psychiatric hospital. At that psychiatric hospital, patients are admitted, obviously for a variety of reasons, but as part of the healthcare that's rendered to those patients, they're placed on an observation level. That observation level can range from anything to 15 minutes. They have to be observed as to where their location is and what their activities are, to one-to-one observation. In this particular case, it was one-to-one observation, which can only be done through a physician's order. That is a medical determination that this patient potentially poses a risk to himself or others, and therefore requires that someone be with them at arm's length, 24/7.
So you're saying if this were not a psychiatric hospital and not a psychiatric patient, then this would not be a healthcare liability claim under these facts?
I'm not necessarily saying that because, for example, the case that I mentioned earlier out of the Dallas Court of Appeals, I don't believe that that was a psychiatric hospital. I believe they had a psychiatric ward where a patient had gotten loose.
Okay, so let's say it's not a psychiatric patient. No history of any kind of mental illness. It's a reverend who's the patient and assaults an employee. Is that a healthcare liability claim or not?
It would be a healthcare liability claim because what you're talking about is you're talking about patient observation, monitoring, what is done in relation to that patient's care or treatment.
So any assault in a hospital is a healthcare liability claim.
You're asking if a patient assaults any
person in a hospital, that's a healthcare liability claim.
It would once again go back to what the specific acts or omissions being complained of are and how inseparable those may be from a particular.
Well, I'm talking about this is not a person with a mental health condition. There's no evaluation. There's no order that says they need to be carefully monitored. It's just a patient who's come in and assaults a visitor or an employee.
For no apparent cause. And that may not be a healthcare liability claim.
Let me ask
you this. Because observation is not inseparable necessarily from that particular patient's treatment or care, because we are dealing, there is a distinction to be drawn between psychiatric patients, psychiatric facilities, and your general medical facilities.
Let me ask this. Let's say that this is a case of a physical assault, general facts, it's a physical assault, and the employee is injured, okay? And disregard that there is another plaintiff in this case. It's just the patient assaulting an employee, and the employee is injured and then files a workers' comp claim for injuries sustained during the course and scope of his employment. Is when they file that workers' comp claim, is it required under your view of the case that they file an expert affidavit? Is it a healthcare liability claim in that instance?
I think it would depend greatly upon the specific acts or omissions they're complaining of. For example, if they were complaining that there was inadequate security or inadequate policies with regard to how.
No, they're just claiming that I was hurt in the course and scope of employment. And under the Workers' Comp Act, I have a remedy, and that is benefits that the labor code provides. And so they file a workers' comp, plain vanilla workers' comp claim. Is it subject to dismissal if an expert report's not filed?
I don't necessarily think that would be the case. But once again, it would be determined upon what the acts or omissions being complained of. They don't complain of any acts or omissions that are inseparable from the rendition of healthcare.
So in the plain vanilla workers' comp case, and the act or omission is this very case, a psychiatric patient, and they're filing a workers' comp claim, then you're saying that that is a healthcare liability claim. And if they don't file an expert report in this workers' comp context, then the case is dismissed.
That's what I would say. And that's because workers' compensation, whether someone is a subscriber to workers' compensation or not, has never been the test utilized by this court to determine whether or not a claim is a healthcare liability claim. What has been used by this court and courts across the state is what are the acts or omissions actually being complained of and whether or not those are inseparable from the rendition of healthcare services.
Well, the act complained here was of the safety. There wasn't any allegation that this person was receiving medical treatment and therefore caused this injury.
Well, the actual complaints in this case were that there was a failure to properly train employees, failure to properly supervise them. There was a complaint with regard to the environment of care and whether or not it was a safe environment of care. But when you're talking about, for example, a psychiatric facility, all of those are part and parcel of the treatment rendered to these patients.
Is there a period of time where these patients become lucid and become well enough to be released?
Yes. Well, patients are discharged from psychiatric facilities.
So correct. You're essentially saying, as the Chief said, and Justice Verma said, all patients involved in this type of treatment, if you're going to have a claim that involves them, you must have an expert report.
I would say that that's correct, because if you're actually alleging that you failed to somehow properly supervise either it be staff members or the patient with regard to the observation, monitoring of this patient, or in the event necessary, some kind of behavioral intervention, then that's a healthcare liability claim, correct?
What about the source of the duty? The Court of Appeals had some discussion in their opinion about the source of the duty owed to each plaintiff here. Can you discuss, is the duty the same?
The duty may be distinguishable and may be different. It may not necessarily be the same, but that, once again, does not...
What is it here?
That goes beyond the threshold question of whether or not it's a healthcare liability claim. You know what? It would be interesting to know what the duty here specifically would be, because there's no expert report. It would require an expert report nonetheless.
Is it medical expert testimony that's necessarily required, or if we're talking about safety in the workplace, would that be a different type of expert?
It would be medical expert testimony, and the reason being is because you can't lose sight of the context of this particular circumstance.
There are, I guess, hospitals employ all sorts of administrative staff and consultants, and are there consultants that come in to talk about the safety aspects? And by that I mean security, when a patient, there is an altercation, does security run over? How, I mean, isn't that really a different type of inquiry?
It is, there are consultants that maybe, say, for example, from outside the hospital that would come in and discuss aspects of safety or security with regard to even patient restraint. But nonetheless, those particular aspects have to be tailored towards what the purpose of this facility is. And
the
so
complaint.
They would fall nonetheless under healthcare liability claims, and that's because you can't lose sight of the context in this case.
Well, that you have a patient who exhibits aggressive behavior in an area that's not monitored, if you will. And so does it take a doctor to say that there should be security guards, that there should be security cameras, so that when a patient does exhibit aggressive behavior, someone can come in and at least rescue the employee? Do you need a doctor to say that?
I would say yes, and that's because of the context in which this occurred. I mean, some of these decisions
may seem... Explain that. Yeah. What do you mean by context?
Let me give you an example. There's been an allegation with regard to the presence or absence of video cameras and whether or not that would have made a difference in this case. At a psychiatric facility, the presence or absence of a video camera takes on an additional significance because of the patient population you have there. For example, Mr. Vidari, the patient in this case, was schizophrenic. So whether or not one is even present, that's actually a professional judgment made by the professionals there at the hospital as to whether or not is that appropriate, does it lend towards an improvement of the care of that treatment. And furthermore, for example, video cameras, I mean, the sole purpose for those video cameras would be for observation, patient observation, and to the extent that would be a safety component, once again, that would be wrapped up into the rendition of healthcare services.
Only a medical doctor can talk about the type of security required in an institutional hospital facility. Only a doctor can give that
opinion. I wouldn't say only a doctor, but you would definitely need a doctor to offer an opinion on that aspect. You would also need a doctor to offer an opinion as to whether or not this particular patient was on the proper observation level.
What type of doctor would be qualified to talk about the actual security in a building? What type of doctor would that be?
Well, psychiatrists would regularly and routinely be engaged in training involved in, for example, this would be classified as behavioral intervention. They would teach others, that be nursing staff, in terms of what they're to look for, because initially what they try to do is prevent the crisis from occurring. And there are certain cues that they're taught with regard to patient behavior. And so that a psychiatrist would be involved in that aspect. And they may involve other consultants as well to tailor the situation or tailor the training being provided to a healthcare setting.
Counsel, in your brief, you say that the claims raised by Williams, the gravamen of the claims, assert health care. What about safety? Do you think they are part
also,
of safety as well?
They do involve safety as well, because what we're talking about here, when you're talking about patient observation, the level of observation, the monitoring that's conducted, as well as any intervention, that's both part of health care treatment. But part of that healthcare treatment is maintaining patient safety. So they're really kind of intertwined here.
When a healthcare provider movement under Chapter 74 for dismissal because of the absence of an expert report, should that movement have to identify the type of healthcare claim that the movement believes is being asserted so that it can be reviewed on appeal? As you know, there are different types of healthcare liability claims. There's health care, there's medical care, there's safety, there's professional services, there's administrative services. If the movement doesn't specify, then the appellate courts are left guessing or having to go through each of those. Should a movement have to, at least appeal purposes, or maybe even at the trial court too, identify the type of health care claim
Well, I don't know if that's actually been a standard that's been utilized in terms of whether or not the movement needs to identify specifically what claim they believe is being
and
asserted.
And if the issues were clear, we wouldn't be here for your case.
That may be correct.
So what do you think?
I think, for example, in this case, I know that we asserted that it was a health care liability claim, but we specifically identified that aspect of the statute, which encompasses all the aspects that you mentioned, which are health care liability claim as well as safety. In terms of what allegations they may make, it's, you know, other than what's contained in the petition, it was believed that this is a healthcare liability claim, but because they're so intertwined, that is, rendition of healthcare at a psychiatric facility and the safety of patients, and for that matter, as well as staff members, we contended that they asserted either.
Well, rather than being injured, he was fired? Because he refused to cooperate with the investigation or refused to go along with the cover-up and so forth. And so he sued for being wrongfully fired. It still involves all those safety issues that you just talked about, and whether that, you know, what standards should have been applied and so forth. He wouldn't cooperate, so they fired him. Does his claim a health care claim?
I think it would be a health care claim. As you know, historically, health care claims have also involved hiring. So I don't see why it wouldn't also involve termination.
I have a question. I want to get back to this issue, or actually ask you about the issue that the lack of a doctor-patient relationship. Now, that seems to go against the plain language of the entire statute that was certainly intended to cut down on frivolous lawsuits being filed against medical providers who are providing medical care to a patient. And certainly there are certain definitions within the statute that talk about that relationship with the patient. And so what's your authority? How are you extending this to say that it doesn't, that doctor-patient relationship does not have to exist?
Well, what's interesting is that there has been a change or departure from the predecessing statute, which was 4590I, where a claim was specifically associated with patient.
Right.
To where now there's a new definition of claimant, and claimant is much more broadly defined. It is not limited solely to patients' claims.
Wasn't that done to make sure that it was clear that not just the patient could file suit, but if the patient had died, that also the patient's representatives could file suit? I mean, when you look at the definition of health care in the Act, it specifically says that health care means any act or treatment performed or furnished or that should have been performed or furnished by any health care provider for, to, or on behalf of a patient. So when you look at the statute as a whole, which we have to, it definitely is looking at that relationship between the doctor and the patient. And so what's your authority that we would extend this beyond that just common sense view of what this statute was meant to do?
Well, obviously, the provision of health care must necessarily involve patients. This case falls squarely within the definitions provided in the statute. There was a patient involved in this matter, and the health care that was to be rendered to him involved proper supervision, observation, monitoring, and in the event necessary, behavioral intervention. And we happen to have two claimants here. What's interesting is if these were two patients involved, we wouldn't be here today, I don't believe.
Well, but these are two different plaintiffs who have two completely different claims.
I agree with you. They do have. Their claims are separate and distinguishable because they have individual claims. One obviously had a claim, or his estate had a claim for the wrongful death, and Mr. Williams had a claim for his personal injuries. And the statute addresses that issue because each claimant is determined by the personal injuries or death suffered. In this case, you've got two of them. Mm-hmm. But in either case, we've got patient involvement, we've got the rendition of health care here, and Mr. Williams falls squarely within the definition of claimant because what he's asserting is our health care liability claims.
But you do acknowledge that we have not ruled on this issue.
There's been a clear decision with regard to that issue. That's correct.
Thank you.
Are there any further questions?
Thank you, counsel. The court is ready to hear argument from the respondent.
May it please the court, Mr. Hessel will present argument for the respondent.
May it please the court. My name is Charles Hessel, and I represent the respondent, Frederick Williams. in my time before the court, I'm going to demonstrate why the courts below should be affirmed for two reasons. First, Mr. Williams' claim is not a health care liability claim because the gravamen of the claim is not health care liability, but rather the gravamen of the claim is workers' compensation, a suit filed for failure to maintain a safe workplace. The second is the legislature never intended Chapter 74 to apply to workers' compensation claims.
What is your response to his argument that the legislature specifically defined claimant more broadly?
The legislature did define claimant more broadly. However, in order to have a claimant, it has to be a health care liability claim. And this is not a health care liability claim because it's not directly related to the rendition of health care. The operative statute involved here specifically says the safety issue has to be directly related to health care. In this case, Mr. Williams' allegations in no way implicate any kind of breach of the standard of medical care. More importantly, Mr. Williams' claims are valid and can be maintained regardless of the merits of Mr. Vidori's suit.
Counsel, you just said that Mr. Williams' claims in no way implicate medical standards. One of Mr. Williams' claims is failing to properly train him to work at West Oaks, including not warning him of the, quote, inherent dangers of working with the conditions and inherent tendencies that Vidore, a schizophrenic patient, possessed. Does that not implicate any medical or psychiatric standards, knowing how to work with and treat schizophrenic persons?
No, Your Honor, it doesn't.
Not at all?
And the reason why is because the hospital is merely the situs of the incident. It's merely the situs. And Mr. Vidore was a patient, but the allegations are allegations that can be found across the state in similar fact patterns involving law enforcement, prison guards, private security, the bailiff of this court.
Except the statute doesn't apply to all those other entities, right?
No, it doesn't, and it doesn't apply to this case either, because in this case, his allegations are not directly related to health care.
So the fact of the occurrence doesn't matter in this situation? The fact where this incident occurred?
No, it doesn't, Your Honor. The mere situs of the claim does not establish it being a health care liability claim.
What if we found that it was a health care liability claim? Let's just switch gears a little bit. What if the court were to determine that it is a health care liability claim? Then we get to the issue of claimant. What would your argument be with regard to that issue of how the legislature defined claimant?
Actually, it's the same as what your question was earlier, and that is that claimant is, its definition is to include the heirs of the estate, the derivative claims. It broadens the person who can be called a claimant, because otherwise an administrator of an estate who wasn't actually the patient could argue that they're outside of Chapter 74. But by broadening it, they included the persons that could be included in a health care liability claim. In this case, we don't have that situation.
I'd like to get back to the question here that I asked. Why doesn't where this occurred, why doesn't that matter? Because it seems to me that the court is going in a direction that if an incident happens inside of a healthcare facility, then it must be a healthcare liability claim. So why isn't that the situation here?
This court has repeatedly held that the situs of the claim, merely being in a hospital, is not enough to make it a hospital liability claim.
Well, a spider bite's a healthcare liability claim, and there's been some other cases that seem to indicate that the occurrences, where the occurrence took place, is important.
That's not, I don't entirely agree with that, Your Honor. The spider bite case that this court decided this last summer, that involved state regulations and a nursing home and a spider bite. In the spider bite case, the state regulations required a nursing home to have adequate pest provisions to keep the spiders away. That regulation created a medical standard of care because it applied directly to nursing homes. This is a different situation. There aren't statutes that require this.
What about Marks? The Marks case, the footboard that fell off.
on a bed.
In that case, this court decided that the medical equipment that failed was directly related to the patient. In this case, it's not directly related to the patient. It's related to Mr. Williams' safety.
Well, I'm going to ask about one more case. Yamada versus Friend occurred at a water park where the allegation was that there was a failure to provide the adequate tools in the event of an accident. Why isn't this more like that? You know, the allegation is that there was a failure to train.
In that case, the medical equipment that was being used was for a medical purpose. In this case, Mr. Williams' claims of them not having a proper security devices, not having a radio, not having a panic button in the smoking area, that doesn't relate to the patient care.
But the claim that they failed to train him to deal with these types of patients in these situations does appear to be closer to the types of allegations by analogy in Yamada, for example.
Respectfully, it's not, Your Honor. This type of training is provided to law enforcement and security officers across the state yearly. It's defensive tactics training. It's called officer safety. In this case, it would be technician safety. It's meant to protect the employee. And Mr. Williams wasn't provided any of that training. That's the gravamen of his claim.
However, police officers are not trained to treat schizophrenically violent person. They're trained to either subdue them, protect them from hurting themselves, or protecting the public. At a hospital like this, the training is intended for treatment. So it's a different animal here, isn't it?
Mr. Williams was a technician. His job was to monitor and observe Mr. Vidori. He wasn't assigned to treat him. He was assigned to monitor and observe him, and he was assigned to notify a nurse if he noticed anything unusual, if he started noticing violent behaviors. But he wasn't there to treat him. He was part of the security.
So a state trooper could just as well have been there instead of Mr. Williams.
That's correct. If a state trooper took a job at the hospital as a technician, yes, it's very possible. And then you would have had somebody with the proper training.
Then why does your client allege a failure to train or establish proper protocols in dealing with schizophrenic patients, if that's the case?
The training that's at question is whether or not he was provided defensive tactics training, officer safety training. That's the kind of training that's provided to private security outside of the law enforcement context. And that's the type of expert that if there's one needed at all in the case, that's the type of expert that would be called. Somebody that's former military, somebody that's a former prison guard, somebody that has that kind of experience at observing people that are potentially violent.
Is there a difference in your mind between a person who sometimes commits violent acts and a person who is chronically violent because of a schizophrenic or mental defect?
Of course there's a difference, Your Honor.
Do you know how to deal with the former?
Actually, yes, you do, Honor. I am a former law enforcement officer. I have received the training.
Very well. Do you know how to deal with the latter?
Dealing with the people who are
chronically violent persons who have a schizophrenic problem.
Yes, Your Honor, it's the same way.
Oh, it is? Do you know how to treat the latter?
No, Your Honor, I don't.
Do you know what protocols or procedures should be put in place when that type of person comes to a facility for treatment?
Yes, Your Honor. And the types of protocols that they're talking about are similar to when an officer responds to a violent call. Some departments have a policy and a procedure that two officers respond. The police departments have policies that say that an officer has to wear a radio so that he can call for help if he needs it. Those are the types of protocols that should have been in place.
Opposing counsel says that, as I understood his argument, that in a hospital setting, if there is a physical assault of a patient against an employee, that to sustain a workers' compensation claim, there has to be an expert report filed in every case. What is your response to that?
I think that that's contrary to the legislative intent. And to begin with, when they enacted 4590I, The reason was to deal with the insurance crisis, the medical professional insurance crisis. In this case, there's no such allegations, or there's nothing before the record that says that there's the same kind of crisis affecting general liability policies or workers' compensation policies. And even more importantly, workers' compensation policies, there can't be a crisis because that is provided by the state, through the state, at reasonable costs. So there is no crisis that would enact Chapter 74. Chapter 74 was never intended to apply to workers' compensation claims or claims of injured workers, especially healthcare workers.
Actually, in workers' compensation, the claim is made against the insurance carrier, is it not? It can't be made against the employer.
In Texas workers' compensation, it can be made against the employer if, as in this case, West Oaks is a non-subscriber. And
they don't have workers' comp. They're a non-subscriber. They don't have workers' comp.
That is correct.
If they are a subscriber, they have workers' comp, unless it's a death, there can be no claim made against the employer, can there?
Unless it's gross negligence, if they have workers' comp.
Well, a death with gross negligence. So you have to, as long as your client's still alive, if he's covered by comp, he's in the workers' comp system claiming against the carrier, not the employer. And all we're talking about here is, since they're not workers' comp covered, since there is no comp, we have a liability claim, and the question is it go under the procedures of the Medical Liability Act? It seems like in workers' comp, the question of expert report goes out the window. It's not even there because it's not against the employer. Am I missing something on that?
Respectfully, Honor, you are. This case was brought under the Labor Code, Section 406.033.
But that provides where there's no coverage, correct?
Correct. And so, West Oaks is a non-subscriber.
Okay. So if there's no, but if there is coverage, you don't have to have an expert report, do you? You just go and say he's injured on the job, and then the carrier's liable for it. That claim is not against the employer.
Unfortunately, Your Honor, if this court finds that workers' compensation claims are covered under Chapter 74, that's an issue that this court's going to hash out. Because if the employer wants to deny the claim, then...
Can the employer deny a claim under workers' comp? I thought the carrier, I thought the statute specifically said the employer cannot control the adjusting of a claim under workers' comp. Only the carrier can do that.
In that case, the carrier could require an expert report saying this is a health care liability claim.
But the carrier is not the employer. The carrier is not a health care provider, are they?
If they're the ones that are involved in the case, it would be a derivative claim where they would be stepping into the shoes of the health care provider.
But to get it to this case, a non-subscriber, they don't have the same defenses as a defendant in an ordinary case. Isn't that correct?
That's correct, Your Honor.
And the burden on the employee in a non-subscriber case is not the same as the burden on a plaintiff in a regular negligence case, like an auto accident of unrelated parties.
That is correct, Your Honor.
So why would we require in a non-subscriber case like this one for an expert report to be required, subject and without it, the case is dismissed? Even though the employee establishes that the injury occurred during the course and scope of his or her employment with the non-subscriber.
This court shouldn't allow this type of claim to fall under the purview of Chapter 74 because it does involve an injured worker. And the defenses that are waived by a non-subscriber demonstrate the legislature's intent with a workers' compensation scheme to encourage employers to have workers to carry workers' compensation. And it demonstrates the state's policy of protecting our healthcare workers, of protecting our employees. And I can't think of any situation where a healthcare provider, save one absurd exception, I can think of no situation where a healthcare worker should have to file a Chapter 74 expert report in order to maintain his claim and his rights under protections of the workers' compensation scheme. Now, the absurd example would be if you had a professional guinea pig that lended himself out, was hired by hospitals to have experimental surgeries performed. And during one of those surgeries, there was a breach of the standard medical care. In that circumstance, perhaps a Chapter 74 expert report would be required. But that is an absurd exception. Other than that, I can't think of any situation where a healthcare provider who is injured in the course and scope of his employment should be required to limit his remedies or to have to jump through extra procedural hoops in order to maintain his claims.
And applying that analogy to a non-subscriber situation, would it be your argument then that any employee injured at the place of his employer, which is a healthcare liability location, would be able to then pursue a claim for those damages, no matter how the injury occurred to the employee?
Yes, Your Honor, unless you can think of a situation that a fact pattern that has escaped me, because I can think of no situation where a healthcare worker should have to file that report.
Now, okay, so if a nurse is trying to draw blood and accidentally scrapes herself with the needle, that's not a healthcare liability claim. In a non-subscriber case, the nurse should be able to sue the hospital or whichever healthcare provider she believes is liable without complying with Chapter 74.
I believe that's true, Your Honor.
And that goes, in your opinion, for any claim by an employee against an employer who is a healthcare liability?
I don't know that I would go so far as to make it absolute, because fact patterns tend to evolve that always question the law. But like I said, I can't think of a fact pattern that where a Texas healthcare employee should have to file an expert report in order to receive his remedies under the Texas Workers' Compensation Insurance Scheme.
So essentially, your position is that the Chapter 74 excludes employees and healthcare liability employers.
Yes, Your Honor. Yes,
and
Your Honor.
Excludes them all. Is there language here that you think indicates that?
In the statute itself, there's no language, but the Texas Workers' Compensation Scheme has been in effect for nearly 100 years in one form or another. This is a long-standing policy of the state to protect the workers, and it's not a small issue. There are thousands of healthcare workers across the state of Texas, and the U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics says that each year there's more than 14,000 injuries on the job in hospitals to healthcare workers. This is a major problem. If in enacting Chapter 74, they would have intended to disregard, to supplant such a major, well-established statutory protection scheme, clearly they would have said that, and they did not.
It doesn't supplant it, as you point out. It just, as you say, has procedural hoops or limitations on remedies. It doesn't supplant the liability scheme. It just, as you say, requires an expert report.
In some aspects, Your Honor, it does supplant it.
In the limitation on remedies.
And this is how. Many of the workers' compensation claims are claims for health care providers who are off of work for 1 or 2 days or 5 days or 2 weeks, small amounts of money. By requiring an expert report, these people are, by being a non-subscriber and requiring an expert report, these people are left with no remedy, because they won't be able to find a lawyer that'll take the case, because they're gonna have $5,000 in expenses to just file a claim that may be for only a few thousand dollars. And in today's economy, it's very obvious that a few thousand dollars can put somebody on the street. And that is not following the Texas policy of protecting our healthcare workers. This is a very important issue that needs to be kept separate.
Is it the expense of the expert report that's the impediment, or the difficulty in getting one?
It's the expense of the expert report. It's the attorney's fees and the time that is spent in defending all the appellate challenges. And there will be more appellate challenges if this is extended to workers' compensation claims. All of these add up. And if a person can't find an attorney that will file the case for them, then it has impeded their rights and remedies under the workers' compensation scheme.
I want to give you a chance to answer one criticism of your position, and that is the petitioner says there doesn't have to be a doctor-patient relationship, which is sort of prominent in your brief as the source of the duty. There doesn't have to be that sort of relationship for there to be a health care liability, for this to be governed by a health care liability statute? What's the answer?
I see I'm out of time, Your Honor. May I answer?
You can briefly answer that, please.
This court has decided that a patient-physician relationship is not necessarily necessary in order to bring a health care liability claim. But in this case, there is no relation to the rendition of medical services.
But when has the court decided that?
In a long line of cases, Your Honor. I believe it started with Marx and Yamada. I mean, the source of the duty is always a consideration, and the court below acknowledged the source of the duty. In this case, the source of the duty comes from the hospital as an employer and their duty to provide a safe workplace to their employee. Outside of the workers' compensation arena, or this case does not involve a claim that is directly related to the rendition of medical services. And that's the key language in the statute that this court needs to look at. And it's for these reasons that we ask that the court below be affirmed.
Counsel, if I may, Chief, you talked about the problem of injured employees not being able to pursue claims that may be expensive to pursue in a non-subscriber context. What about the employee who has a $75 injury? Similarly, you're not going to be able to find a lawyer probably to pursue that claim. Why, that problem would still be out there, even if we take your approach in this case.
That is correct, Your Honor. That problem is still there. But this problem expands upon that and takes that low-dollar claim and extends it to possibly being that the lawyers won't take any claims that won't have a recovery of more than $20,000 or even higher. And so that it compounds that problem that Your Honor points out.
Further questions?
Thank you, Counsel.
Thank you.
I'd like to go back and just quickly review what the specific allegations were in this particular matter. Mr. Williams complained that West Oaks failed to properly train him to work with patients with serious conditions and tendencies, such as the patient in this case. Historically, since DiversiCare, failure to properly train has always been held to be a healthcare liability claim. Failure to adequately supervise is another allegation that he makes in this particular matter.
Counsel, let me ask you we've read the allegations.
Yes.
Let's assume these are healthcare liability claims. Your opposing counsel says it doesn't matter. This is workers' comp. This is not intended to be included as part of Chapter 74. That's the pressure point. What's your response?
My response to that is, first and foremost, I don't think that this case will have the type of impact that he's expressing in the court, that it will in essence eliminate the workers' compensation claim. But furthermore, there is a provision in Chapter 74 that indicates, and it was clearly the legislature's intent, that in the event of a conflict, provisions of Chapter 74 control. I would contend that because of the acts or omissions complained of in this case, because they're inseparable from the rendition of healthcare services, this is a healthcare liability claim, and to the extent that there's any conflict between the workers' compensation scheme and Chapter 74, the provisions of Chapter 74 are controlled by virtue of that language in Chapter 74.
Let me ask just a moment in regard to that. The Workers' Comp Act provides that if you do not have care coverage, the employer loses its defenses. Loses its defenses basically against the employee's negligence claim or claim against the employer. If an expert report is filed, it's sufficient. If one is required and filed, it's sufficient. And in the case is tried, would it be your position that the employer somehow has defenses against the employee, or has the employer still, as the Workers' Comp Act says, lost all of its defenses?
I would say that the defendant has all of those defenses available, and the reason being is because that would be in direct conflict with Chapter 74.
Well, that's what I'm wondering. I don't see the conflict, actually.
I don't necessarily see a conflict either.
Because
but in the event
it seems to me like all Chapter 74 does is say you you can sue, but before you proceed, you have to have the expert report. But that's all it says. It doesn't say that you're reinstating these common law defenses. So I'm struggling with how it conflicts is where I am on that.
I don't know that there's necessarily a conflict, and frankly, I think that really where the focus should be for this particular court is in line with what was pronounced in DiversiCare, that the act governs separate from their health care services. It's a health care liability claim. The status of the defendant as a subscriber to workers' compensation or not is never entered into that equation. So, this is a health care liability claim. If it's determined not to be so, then the court will inadvertently be accomplishing two things. Number one, it will be inadvertently depriving a health care provider of the procedure, the carefully crafted procedural provisions in Chapter 74 that determine by a threshold question based on the essence of the claim whether or not it's meritorious. It will eliminate that. The other thing is it will have inadvertently lowered the applicable standard of care at healthcare facilities with regard to scenarios such as this.
Let me ask you, in every case that we've decided, there was a doctor-patient relationship that existed, except for Yamada, and we specifically did not deal with that issue in Yamada and said so specifically in a footnote. And there seems to have been some talk today that we have decided this issue. What is your response to that?
Well, my response to that is I don't believe the statute now requires that relationship exist for a determination to be made that it's a health care liability. Now, the existence of such a relationship, physician-patient relationship, may go to the duty, but that's a question that goes beyond just the threshold question of whether or not what's being asserted is a health care liability claim. Because the acts and omissions complained of by Mr. Williams are inseparable from the rendition of health care services, and because he's a claimant as defined by the statute, the clear and plain language of the statute, we would ask that this court reverse and remand with instructions to dismiss the matter in accordance with the statute.
Thank you, Mr. Clement. Counsel, the cause is submitted, and the court will now take a brief recess.